Welcome to the Michael Fowler Centre Auditorium for this morning's presentations. Our next speaker for today is Selena Dickelman. She has the distinction of being the first one in her bio of in our book here to use a Star Trek thing. We're talking about Tribbles. So I've been expecting a lot of Star Trek references, but we've only got one so far, and Selena has the honour of taking that particular one. So now she claims to be a mixologist and a poultry hacker. So I will now introduce, ladies and gentlemen, Selena Hackerman. Selena, sorry, I'll get that right, Selena Dickelman.
Thank you. All right, everybody hear me? I can hear myself. Yeah, okay, all right, awesome. Hi. So I'm here today to talk about open source databases, and specifically about which databases might solve your problems and also my problems. And I also did an actual survey. So to start out with, if we go back in time about 5 years, this is kind of what you might have thought the open source database ecosystem kind of looked like. We have the venerable Berkeley DB, which you might be familiar from things like SendMail. It's something from really started the project probably was from the 80s, and it's a key value store, one of the original open source ones. Then we have MySQL, which I'm assuming most of you are familiar with. We had PostgreSQL as well, which also originally started out in the 80s, but was only open sourced in the late 90s. And then we have SQLite, which appeared around 2000. So 2005, this is kind of what things might have looked like if you didn't look too deeply. Fast forward to now, and the picture is quite a bit different. As you look around, there are more and more of these open source databases out there. Through the course of my research, I found about 50 that had communities, that had websites with documentation, code that you could download, recently updated, that sort of thing. It would not surprise me, actually, if a new one was announced during this talk. Good. And on Monday morning, actually, we did have a new one, HyperGraphDB, which, yeah, if you read about it, it's kind of cool. So that begs the question, of course, if we've got all of these different systems out there, which one should I use? And it turns out that this question is actually not that easy to answer. This is one of my favorites. I'm actually going to be boothing at the open day with a bunch of local volunteers, and I'm sure that we're going to get asked this question over and over again. I'm happy to answer it, but it is fairly difficult to answer without a follow-up, which is, what is the actual problem that you're trying to solve? So some of the problems that I myself try to solve and other people do, one fairly specific one is I need to store and manipulate GIS data. And right now in the open source world, the canonical answer for this is probably PostGIS, which really only works with Postgres. I need a database for my blogs. This is pretty common, right? If you're using something like WordPress, probably just going to default to MySQL because that's what's easy to use. And if you're really big, if you're really lucky and you have really huge scaling problems because you're doing something that everyone wants to participate in, you might have an issue like this. If you're Facebook, if you're MySpace, you know, you face a much larger problem than other people have to face, of course, and often the out-of-the-box databases, the relational databases that were available in 2005, for example, probably aren't going to meet your needs. So really, when you're looking at any of these issues, you really have to define your problem and what it is that you want to solve. And for Postgres, that is being a replacement for Oracle. So in looking at all of that, we've got all these problems out there. You also need to narrow it down to which ones are actually important. And of course, everyone has performance on the top of that list. And I'm not really going to talk a lot about performance today because space is really new. There's 50 different databases. It'd be pretty hard to create a benchmark that would mean anything in that context. But there are, fortunately, some resources out there right now, and people are performing tests on databases that are like each other and publishing their results. And I'm going to share some of those links on a website later. Another important issue is interoperability, and I think this is going to be one of the biggest issues moving forward because of this proliferation of different open source databases. How are you going to get your data in, and then how are you going to get it back out, and how painful is that process? And did the developers of these databases create APIs or standard formats that you can exchange data with? And finally, I think a really important aspect of these what I'm calling the open source database ecosystem is how is the software being made, and are these projects sustainable ultimately? Are they getting new contributions, and are they developing in a way that invites more people to their projects? So I tried to ask some of those questions of these projects. So ultimately, also, I want to say that I don't think that just a single database is going to solve many of the problems in the future. I think that often we are going to be working with multiple databases and trying to connect them to one another in different ways. So here's a chart that I made talking about the date at which a project was open sourced. And you'll see in 2006, from 2006 until now, we've had about as many new projects open sourced and active since 1986. And that's fairly significant increase in development effort. So I actually did conduct a survey. and I'm going to go through the questions that I asked in a minute. I'm not a professional survey creator, and in the future I think that I'm going to consult someone on that. But I did get, you know, a reasonable number of responses, and I will talk about some of that, but I also had to do a lot of my own research, of course. So the questions that I asked: what is the name of your project? That's a good place to start. How would you describe it? What's the target user or audience for the database? Is there a proprietary work-alike? Because this is often a motivation, right? You have a proprietary database and you want to do something with it that you can't, or you have to pay for some licenses that you don't want to pay for, so kind of go in a different direction. I asked about developers, user mailing lists, documents for getting new developers up to speed. I asked about revision control system, because I think this is an important thing for projects to think about. Are you using centralized revision control or distributed? Because a lot of these projects actually still use a centralized revision control system. What motivated you to create the new project? Because there are quite a few forks. What's your roadmap? Do you provide commercial support? Because this can be really important for some companies. What languages or drivers are available? Do you need any help with particular drivers? This is a fun one to ask because I actually got feedback from several of the projects, you know, requesting, could we get some developers, you know, to work on this driver? And another great one was, what's some question that I should have asked? And I got a lot of hilarious responses to that. And finally, what feature sets your project apart from your peers? And this question was actually, the information from that was most of what I used actually from this long list of questions. So back to my own research. I'm going to go through the classification system that I put together. And really, I wasn't meaning to create that as a rigid structure that these databases should fit in, but just as a starting point for people if, you know, you want to compare these things, what some reasonable comparisons between databases might be. So the three main means of comparison were database model, infrastructure features, so that has to do with scalability primarily, and then finally development style. So when you're looking at database models, really what you're looking at is the operations that you're likely going to be performing on the data and how you're going to structure the data to facilitate that. So in the relational world, here are kind of some of the standard models that you might encounter. OLTP, which is largely transaction-oriented, the embedded, which isn't really a model, but it changes a lot of the performance characteristics of the database and, you know, whether it's multi-user or not often. Column store, this is fairly hot topic right now, also in the NoSQL world. Massively parallel system, so you're trying to parallelize queries across a large amount of data. And then also streaming. And there aren't really a lot of open source options in the streaming realm right now, but there are quite a few streaming companies that have based their products on open source databases. So this is kind of the rough cut that I came up with for this. So MySQL and PostgreSQL are in the OLTP realm. And there's this new database called QBRID that came out of Korea out of practically nowhere that I just found. They open sourced in 2006, and basically they are aiming to be a MySQL replacement and are being used in a lot of Korean BBSs. The embedded space, there's actually quite a few other Java databases that I would probably fit into this category, but I just, for brevity's sake, I didn't include them. So H2 and HSQLDB were forks of something called Hypersonic from way back when. Then we have SQLite, of course. And then we have these column store databases, and for the most part, these are aimed at people who are data warehousing. You have these massive amounts of data, and being able to compress the data in these columns is a huge performance advantage in those contexts, but not so much an advantage necessarily if you've got an OLTP workload. And I also put in parentheses there Cassandra and HBase, because they are also column-oriented databases, but not relational. So some of the non-relational database models that I tried to fit things into categories on are, we have the flat file. There's this funny presentation from NoSQL East about a database called TIN, which is a database so small that they remove the Y from the tiny. Yeah. little presentations there, it's pretty funny. There's key value stores, which are probably what you'll see the most of right now, primarily aimed at, you know, MapReduce, creating additional fault tolerance, caching, you know, like Memcache. We have multi-value databases. There aren't too many of these in the open source realm anyway. And these are largely multi-dimensional databases where you fit arrays into your value stores. We also have these graph and triple store databases, and I'm saying that triple stores are a subset of graph databases. Hope no one objects to that. But these are primarily aimed at relationship queries, so you'll see these things where you have your, two entities and then the relationship defined between them, and everything in the database is geared toward, finding those relationships as quickly as possible. And then finally, we have these document-oriented database, kind of along the lines of Lotus Notes, you know, so you just, like, dump some stuff in there and then, you know, maybe take it out later, I guess. In the modeling language, they call this semi-structured data, and there are quite a few databases going for that market right now. So as you can see, lots of key value stores, a few in the graph triple store. Neo4j is a Java-based system. Some of you may have heard of that. Forestore and Parliament are not as well known at all and pretty specific to like the RDF communities. And finally, we have these document stores. CacheDB and MongoDB are probably the most, you know, famous kind of people looking at them and playing with them right now. And BerkeleyDB XML is just kind of another example. I don't think, has anybody here actually ever used BerkeleyDB XML? One. Nice. So that's an interesting project, but I don't think it has too many users. So I think CacheDB and MongoDB are probably what people will be using in the future. So anyway, I think the interesting thing about this is, in terms of consolidation, this key value space, at some point it has to collapse, right? Because we're not all going to use all of these different systems all the time. Maybe there will be a division between things that are primarily in memory or things that are primarily in disk. But I think that this space is going to collapse quite a bit, and I really didn't list every single one that's out there. So in the infrastructure features realm, we have things that are called distributed, which has a lot of definitions, the in-memory versus disk issue, and high availability. So in the distributed realm, we have partitioning and sharding, which are similar concepts, but the sharding is, you know, distributing the data out to multiple nodes, essentially. And we have these systems. This is kind of an area where you start to see where the relational databases, at least out of the box, are not supporting some of these features in a way that, well, I think it represents how the relational databases are failing a little bit in communicating. you know, how they support these things. So anyway, so partitioning and sharding is there, but, you know, PostgreSQL, you can partition, but it's something, you know, you have to read up a lot about and implement yourself. It's not just like a configuration option on a table. Replication, there's a lot of different types of replication. There's you know, synchronous, asynchronous, master-slave. And I didn't divide up all of the different permutations here, but, you know, there's at least master-slave replication support in all the ones that I mentioned. And for the most part, I believe they're all asynchronous as well. Memory versus disk. So memory has gotten incredibly cheap. So, of course, we have some databases that are only in memory now. One thing that's interesting here, again, is that none of the SQL databases really have a explicit only store this data in memory option. Of course, there's, you know, your shared buffers configuration. Sorry, did someone say something? Okay, so SQLite, yeah, sorry. So I should have included that. So other than SQLite, like, and looking at the other relational databases, the configuration options that you have really aren't there. And it's probably something that they're going to need to support going forward. The configurability of Cassandra and HBase, and now Hypertable, and Amnesia's probably had it for a while. But that's probably something that people are going to want a lot in the future. And finally, when you start looking at high availability, this is where the field narrows substantially. Of course, you can, with a combination of Heartbeat, DRDB, file system replication, you know, there's lots of stuff that you can do to make this work. But if you're, say, a developer, and you're looking at systems, and you can, with a couple configuration options, have node failover, you know, what are you going to choose? So it's an important space, I think, that, you know, for example, PostgreSQL, we're trying to put more effort and time into looking at our clustering ecosystem. You know, the people who are working on clustering, what exactly are they working on? Why are they working on it? And is that going to actually meet our users' needs? I think that's a really important space right now for these SQL databases, because we do need to provide some better support there. So another aspect, probably to me one of the more interesting aspects of these projects, is where they're headed as communities. And I try to come up with some way of describing how the code development, how people are structuring their code relative to other projects. And in looking at Drizzle, LucidDB, and Postgres, I really saw a system of trying to create a core platform that other things can build off of. Whether that's, so for Postgres, you can have these contrib modules. LucidDB has a very similar structure where there's a very clearly defined modular interface, and then people can just develop additional functionality that they need. Drizzle is also aiming to go in that direction. Then there are these monolithic projects that are more aimed at delivering a comprehensive set of features to developers. And I think that also ends up being reflected in how they interact with their communities. I can't really like prove that or anything, but in just looking at how they accept feature requests and what they actually produce, it's almost in some ways more in tune with a proprietary model where they deliver a set of features and it's not as geared toward modification from the outside. And then finally, I think that the infrastructure projects, there are these projects that are out there that are designed to just fit as like a small like piece of middleware, for example, in between an application and another database. And those projects also have a substantially different outlook in terms of what they decide to support, like very clearly defined APIs that they try not to change or only add things to. It's the protocols coming out in there and the support for other databases, I think, are going to be extremely important. And one interesting thing is that Redis chose not to implement the Memcache protocol. So Redis is
similar to Memcache, except for it's capable of distributing keys across multiple systems. And so that's just an interesting thing that happened there, and it may be good, maybe bad, I don't know, but the incompatibility there, I think, is going to have to be addressed at some point by these systems. Another thing that I asked directly different communities about was how they viewed their community model. You know, if a developer, a new developer comes in, how can they expect to interact with this community? And I divided that up between the traditional benevolent dictator, feature-driven, which just means that the developers are kind of sitting there waiting for either bug reports or people to say, hey, I want this feature and I'm willing to pay for it, kind of thing. And then the other thing, the last division I came up with was small groups. So that could either be the cabal model, which is fairly common, or it can be some kind of consensus-based, you know, or elected group. I feel in some ways like the benevolent dictator projects are that the fact that they have benevolent dictators is an indication that they don't have very many developers. At least in the case of Redis, ExtraDB, and McCoy Distributed DB, that was definitely the case. It was just an individual working on some stuff, and they wish that they had more people working on things with them, but they just don't have it yet. The feature-driven projects, they seem to be just less active, for lack of a better word, and not really seeing like a long-term roadmap for the project. Whatever that may mean for the longevity of the project, they're not necessarily like, you know, an inspiring place for developers, as far as I could tell at the moment. The small group projects tended to either be from a particular company that had, you know, internally developed project and they were releasing it, and now the company was continuing as a development group to work on it, or you know, in the case of like MonetDB. I'm probably not saying that right, but anyway, they've been around for a very long time, and so just over time have kind of developed a foundation and people who are associated with the project making decisions. So I almost feel like this is really like a progression in the maturity of a project. And then finally when you get to the end, several groups were like, oh, those categories are way too restrictive. We're actually a mix of two or maybe all three of these and maybe something else. And I think that as the projects get more mature and more stable, they tend to see that about themselves and report it out. So actually, I have the survey data. I publish it to this website, so you can look at all of the raw data there. I also published a very rough cut of my notes. My plan was to actually take all of this information and push it into Wikipedia. It's going to be challenging because Wikipedia has some issues with the classification and what's actually described as a database management system. For example, most of the NoSQL, at the time when I was originally looking at Wikipedia for this, the NoSQL databases weren't really included in those lists, and so that kind of has to change. I think now there's more of them in there, but anyway, and I also wanted to actually talk to some folks about performing a better survey than what I did. And again, I only ended up talking to about 25 of these projects, and most of them didn't respond to the survey. One, in fact, told me that he just simply had no time for that type of thing. But I would like to get more in touch with these projects and try to get them communicating with each other a little more. So my original thinking in doing this talk and putting this information together was to think about what the future of this open source database ecosystem was going to be. And one of the interesting things that I found out as I was looking at these different systems was that some of them have been implementing each other's protocols. And LucidDB and H2 specifically did it. Well, H2 specifically did it because he actually really admired the Postgres project, but didn't want to contribute C code because he felt it was insecure and, you know, not the best platform for a database. And H2 is in Java. But he did like the project and wanted to implement the protocol. So you can actually use the PSQL client with H2, which is pretty cool. LucidDB has done a similar thing, and they're actually looking at, they developed a system for replicating directly from Postgres into LucidDB. Sphinx, which is a full-text search engine, implemented the MySQL protocol. And I think you're going to be seeing more of this with the full-text search engines because it's so important. And then Tokyo Cabinet / Tyrant implemented the Memcache protocol. So that's a situation where they actually did choose to go with the dominant paradigm instead of implementing their own. And it'll be interesting to see what mashups we see out of that. I think another important thing that's going to happen in this protocol realm is that we're going to need verification that these things can actually speak the protocol that they said that they implemented. Memcapable is a tool for Memcache to certify that. These other projects that have protocols, like, it would be great to have that for MySQL and for Postgres and for any other wire protocols that are out there. I think in that verification process, a really important thing also for the implementers, of which I am one, we need automated repeatable tests for these systems, because verifying that replication works and that what is said that the replication does actually happens is a fairly complicated process. And there aren't that many tools out there that do that effectively. Particularly right now, Postgres is in the process of implementing some more sophisticated replication, and we have found it difficult to create repeatable tests. So more work needs to be done in that space. And finally, I think that there just need to be more people connections between these different projects. I did find that the Java world is kind of over here. And it's really unfortunate because it's a huge number of developers. Probably a lot of them may be out of work right now, like everybody else in the tech industry. And like, it's important that we embrace those developers and bring them in. I'm really excited about H2 implementing the Postgres protocol because it's like a place where we're connecting directly. Finally, I don't know if how many of you here have heard of Thrift? Yeah, a few people. So Thrift came out of Facebook. It's now Apache Thrift, and a project in its own right. And it's a framework for communicating across different systems. And there's all sorts of different things implemented in it: queuing system, database connectors, and ThruDB is a fascinating tool that's out there right now to me. And I think that this is really where the future of the development work, the most important development work, is going to happen, because we really are going to need to communicate between these different database systems efficiently and correctly. So anyway, if you haven't looked at ThruDB, it's a great project. They have like lots of cool examples, and there's a lot of companies currently using software, so I think great things are going to come out of that. So anyway, so a lot of people helped me out with this, including a lot of people responding to survey questions. So there they all are. So, questions? Stuart, you wrote a new database system. Is it Vapor?
No, it supports a subset of SQL 2003. Very small subset.
Thank you. Thank you for proving my point. That wasn't a NoSQL database, though, so you may have failed. New relational data store.
Most of the databases that I said, included in your survey, have SQL interfaces. Do you have any questions about for the implementers about the cross-compatibility of the SQL implementations across those databases?
Sorry, can you raise your hand? Where are you?
I'm sorry?
Where are you?
Yep.
Oh, hi. Okay. Could you say the last part of your question slower, please?
Did you have any questions regarding the cross-compatibility of the SQL implementations across these various databases?
The compatibility of SQL specifically. Well, there are actually a few resources for that out there. There have been different people who have looked fairly closely at that. There's one website, I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but anyway, some people have looked at that, and no, I don't really have a whole lot of concerns about that. I think that's to a large extent converged. There are idiosyncrasies, you know, like, you know, what's the null sort order or whatever, but it's fairly well documented, so I don't think that those issues are that important anymore, to me anyway.
Hi.
Yes. Hi.
For the survey that you did of databases over the past 10 or 15 years, how many of those have actually disappeared and other projects have come that have boosted those numbers that we saw on those graphs?
Yeah. So of the ones that I looked at, I would say that in the relational space, the majority of the active projects that are out there right now are forks of older projects, like probably all of them, either forks of closed source projects or open source ones that died. In terms of the number that died, I can't tell you for sure, right? Like, I have no idea because there's not that many resources out there. In the text file that I uploaded to that OSSDB survey site, I have some links to some older resources that list proprietary and open source databases from the early 90s. So there you can get a little bit of a feel, but it was really a handful in terms of the open source projects that actually made it to the point where they created a website back then. There weren't that many that completely disappeared that I could find. So maybe like three or four.
Hey, so one of the things that, you know, one of the things, there's a huge diversity of these new open source databases and that sort of thing. So one of the questions that I have is, have you seen any signs of consolidation at this point, or is that still a ways off?
I would say it's still kind of a ways off. I think the Bigtable paper and the Amazon papers that have come out have been detailed enough that people are using them for specs for developing their own systems. And several different companies had such an immediate need for that that they all just kind of went off in their own directions. And then what's awesome is that they then open sourced their projects. So we have like Voldemort, HBase, and Cassandra, I think are probably three of the big ones that that came from companies that had a significant data management problem. So we'll see if those companies' problems end up being close enough that they, you know, merge some of these projects. I don't know. I'm definitely seeing, just in terms of companies reporting back that they're trying the open source systems, you see a lot of blog posts on very large companies, you know, like Dig, for example. Did quite a bit of talking about their implementation of Cassandra. So that's, you know, that's good to see.
I have a question regarding the different databases that you did analyze. Did you consider the number of users that uses object-oriented database comparing to relational databases?
No, I didn't, actually. I didn't ask that question. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
No more questions out there? Obviously, no more questions. we might end up finishing early, which makes Selena her favorite. Okay.
So one thing that I wanted to say is that I know that there are a few database practitioners out here today, and we didn't really schedule like a birds of a feather session or anything. I know there was supposed to be one today with Giuseppe around MySQL, But it would be nice if those of you that are here, and I don't know, are any of you working on NoSQL databases? Raise a hand. Nobody? Got a couple? Oh, awesome. It would be great for us to get together and talk about some of this. I spent, you know, about a day on a car ride with a few of the Drizzle developers, and we got to powwow a little bit, but it would be nice to get together and talk. So if you've got some time after this, come up here and let's schedule something. Okay. Yeah. What's the actual time?
Given that there's time, just out of interest, what's the most amusing, fun, big, or other adjective project that you've done with open source databases?
The most amusing project that I've done?
Amusing, could be big, could be fun, like a highlight of what you've done?
I think that the most amusing project that I've helped with in the last few months was a friend of mine implemented a CowSay module inside of Postgres. So how many here are familiar with CowSay? Yeah. So now you can say select CowSay whatever, and then you get a little ASCII cow in a, yeah. Oh, yeah, Nigeria. I actually, I guess that was probably cooler than CowSay. So there's this government, a state government in Nigeria that decided that they wanted to implement a bunch of open source software because they felt it represented freedom, and, you know, there were a lot of ideological reasons why they wanted to do it. So they had a professor that they'd been working with who lives in Canada who just sent an email to the PostgreSQL hackers mailing list and said, "Hey, who wants to go to Nigeria?" And I said, me, please take me. And so anyway, so I went there as a guest of the state, which I highly recommend. I had armed guards. It was a very exciting driving trip through horrible, horrible roads. But I was able to spend a week there with some developers who had only really done proprietary software development, mostly in .NET, and just talk to them about PostgreSQL, what the database community was like, how they could ask questions in the community and learn more, get involved. And they're using Postgres as the database to store a bunch of information, like demographic information, and it's going to drive most of their things, like figuring out, you know, where kids should go to school and if they've been in school, and, you know, various welfare type projects. So that was probably the coolest thing I've done in the last year, not the CowSay thing.
Now that we've finished the questions, has anybody else got a question? Please put a hand up. We've got a few minutes left, so please feel free to ask.
Sorry, I talked really fast.
Anything embarrassing would be good.
Oh, we got a question here from Janice. We're just making you run around.
Yeah. I'm getting fit. That's great. Okay.
Janice, just shout it out.
Oh, good heavens.
The question was, did I ask about licenses and if projects were dual licensed? I did not ask, but I did research that. And there were quite a few dual license projects, which was interesting. For the most part, I think that the dual licensing was a funding model, which, yeah, it's based on current events. I don't know that that's really, really the right way to go. But, you know, best of luck to them. Sorry.
Yeah, I saw the slide on the architecture of the project, and you had a few on there, like core and modules, monolithic infrastructure and stuff. I noticed that MySQL isn't on there. Is that because there's no architecture in MySQL? can you possibly comment?
Well, I did include Drizzle. I actually so there are quite a few. I did include ExtraDB actually as well. I did talk to a bunch of the various forks of MySQL and ask them these questions. Not all of them responded to the survey. So, you know, some of them I just didn't include. So MySQL itself, I just think there's a problem there, right? Like, as far as, like, a community-driven project is a true open-source project where they are incorporating things from outside, the reason why we ended up with all those forks is because it wasn't happening. So, I mean, no... It's no, like, I'm not saying that they suck or anything, but I'm just saying that as far as, like, an experiment in open source software development, they kind of failed in that regard. And it's too bad, right? They had a huge opportunity. But the nice thing about it is that the code was GPL'd, so people were able to take it and do other things with it. So we didn't lose everything. Fanboys.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for coming to the talk. Thank you.